fish, 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 fish. I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line.
I said, oh, fish, boys fish, and girls. Fish, hey, moms and dads, children of all ages, ships at sea, ships on the rocks, ships in calm water, and everybody else, maybe even those of you stuck in traffic. Fish and Frank here, got Robert in the chair across from me, and our producer, RJ, our executive producer, RJ. We're all here today. Fish and Frank's 10 event coming up March 24th, bigger, better. This is either going to be the most amazing, coolest, most wonderful thing you've ever seen, or it's going to be a complete disaster. I don't think there's a lot of middle ground in this one coming up. Monstrous show. We've got all kinds of things going on, but without going into too much tent sale, okay, it's March 24th. Trout seems to be one of the fish that... Is trout getting more numbers or just better size or just kind of hanging in there the same?
Kind of hang.
You all right, Robert?
Same thing, frog every week.
They make great bait, I hear, yeah. Frogs.
Yeah. Oh, don't do that. He's like the frog guy. At one point, he had this huge aquarium full of all these poison arrow frogs and all these, I mean, we went to Costa Rica and he got hooked on all these little weird critters, so we don't say bait and frogs around Robert.
Okay,
he gets teary-eyed.
Yeah, we'll not do that today.
Well, frog leg season, too, so I was thinking what we need to do is come up with some kind of little design for little wheelchairs for all these legless frogs that are out there now.
That would be nice, Robert. That would be wonderful. You've got such a big heart, buddy. You know, maybe we can convince people only take one, and that way we can just give them a little crutch.
Easier to catch him because he'd swim in a circle.
Yeah. All right. So back to my question. Is trout fishing getting better, worse, staying the same?
It's about the same. For some people, it's worse because they didn't adapt to the water temperature increase. You know, all the trout that were starting to show up were in the shallow waters, but now they've dumped back out into that 4 to 6 feet, in some cases 8 feet of water.
It's just weird that they're out that deep. I think that's why people aren't finding them.
Right.
But we had over a 5 degrees increase in temperature, water temperature, which is the critical one. Air temp
doesn't
mean
week.
That much. Since last week.
In 2 weeks, it's 14-degree temperature rise.
So they're looking for a little cooler water. They're going to abandon ship anytime. But I'm going to say this weekend's still going to be good trout fishing.
Absolutely. You know, just got to change it up a little bit, work a paddle tail real slow in some of that deeper water. The bigger trout that I'm hearing about from Pine Island all the way up through Lemon Bay and even up in the intercoastal up through to Venice, a handful of reports from up there. And it's the big, big ones have been coming on small pinfish, like little 3-inch pinfish.
All right. So it should be about the size of an old silver dollar or smaller, half dollar to silver dollar size.
Yeah, somewhere in that range.
All right. I know devilfish had some. But those big ones, you know, that are a quarter, half the size of your palm, they're going to be too big for the trout. They're going to be nice snook bait or redfish bait, but they're going to be too big for that trout. You've got to get those smaller ones. Think of the mouth of a trout, how big that would be. And that's about the size of your bait, boys and girls. I mean, you know, if it's too big to fit in his mouth, it's not like he's got fingers where he can just hold it, take a bite, and, you know, eat it at his leisure the way we would a hot dog, you know. Without the whole opposable thumb thing, it's got to fit down in one gulp. So soft plastics, pinfish, 4 to 5 feet of water, drifting until you find them. Sitting in one spot anchoring up is not going to be your buddy because they could be on a pocket of food or hanging out somewhere because maybe it's cool water or better water. If you're drifting, you and the fish could be looking for each other. If you're anchored, not so much. Bonnetheads next on the list. I got to tell you, people are just raving about the shark fishing. Bonnetheads and out around Cayo Costa, Mondongo, all through the ICW and out between Pine Island and the Barrier Islands. Blacknose, Atlantic sharpnose, black tips.
Sandbars.
Sandbars. There's all kinds of sharks out there right now. This shark season is going to explode in March. I don't think it's going to wait till April.
Yeah, I mean, if the bait keeps showing up the way it is, and it wouldn't surprise me if the tarpon, resident tarpons, start really showing themselves really well here. If this weather keeps up, you know, the next 2 weeks are going to be really interesting.
Way to stay on topic there, buddy. All right. Well, I'm just messing with you, Robert. I got to have something to do. I'm sitting in a chair. I got nowhere to go. All right? True. You know, there's nothing else for me to do here. But lower part of the harbor, Cape Hayes, Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, lots of bonnets. How's the east side of the harbor doing?
A little quiet on the bonnet heads. I've heard of a couple incidental ones, but it seems like the majority are definitely down along the intercoastal and Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, like you said.
Yeah, if you follow the ICW anywhere from Placida all the way down through Sanibel down there, you're going to find a lot of shark activity along that ICW. Not so much in it. Look for water just off of the ICW because of the boat traffic there. They tend to travel in that deeper water, but when they go looking for food or whatever, they're getting off to the sides. Pelican Bay, down around Sanibel, you get Redfish Pass, you're going to get a bunch of them. It's pretty good fishing right now. Sheephead continues to be a big story.
Yeah, I mean, even as warm as the water has gotten, there's still a lot of sheep's head around. You know, they're catching them. You know, the shorebound guys are doing still really well at Placida Trestle, the Tom Adams, but the Anger Pier. I've heard a couple reports, not many, but a couple. Matt Lachey has been really popular the last couple days. And then some of the guys just fishing off the jetties up there in Venice have been doing extremely well on them.
Well, Mary's, Power Pole, Helen's, M13, M16, all of the reefs out within, I would say,
eight, 9 miles. You're getting out of hand there because...
Well, no, because I'm doing Sheephead.
Yeah, but that can encompass them off the near shore.
You don't have Sheephead listed on that.
No, but I have Sheep's Head listed on
there
somewhere.
But you got Sheephead up here, but you don't have it down here. No, I'm sorry. I'm calling foul. RJ, am I right?
I have no freaking idea.
No, all right. No, I have to be right. All right.
Okay.
It's his show. It's his show. He's right. Yeah.
Okay. See, all right. Anyway.
He likes a good argument, he says, but he just wants to win every one of them.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's strange. I'm such a weirdo. All right. All the nearshore reefs within about 8-9 miles, state waters. Once you get out a little further, the sheephead really get thin and harder to find. But on those near ones, man, there's some big sheephead being caught.
Yeah.
And right along the beaches, this is the time, if I'm going to look for sheephead, I'm literally going to go out to a beach. If I don't have a boat, I want to walk out to the beach and just get out in about knee-deep water and wade up and down the shoreline until you see them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of schools that you're not going to... They're not out to the reefs. They're not inside. They're bunching up along the shorelines. And this isn't going to last long. You might have through this weekend to do it. But really keep your eyes open out there. And that'll take me to another point later. So we're on offshore. What's... Talk about offshore. You wanted to do this. Now's your shot. Okay,
now
stand up to the microphone.
Order,
what?
Now you're getting out of order of the list.
Yeah, I know, but I'm not. I don't want to go from sheephead to bass to offshore. We're offshore already.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to fix your list.
Oh, okay. The basically, it's been a little lumpy this week, so a few guys still have made it offshore, but not very far. Last weekend, some incredible reports of some red grouper and some other pelagic species. But the nearshore reefs, by far from that 3 to 15 miles, it's snapper, grunts, porgies, big sheep's head, an occasional cobia, occasional barracuda, and then some different varieties of sharks.
Now, you know, just so you know, boys and girls, before we do the show in the morning, Robert's writing up a whole list. Then we get here to the show, I take it away from him, see it of how his memory is. So I have the list, and he's blind anyway. He can't see it, so, you know.
Yeah.
I got it.
A foot away from me. It's right. It's blurs.
What did you say?
It's all blurs. It's all blurs. Right?
Well, I'm deaf. He's blind. It works good. Okay. I just can never remember which one's Gene Wilder. I think with my hair today, I'm kind of into that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm definitely doing the Gene Wilder hair. All right. Cobia. Is this going to be an In the Harbor event in the next week?
Honestly, I doubt it.
Really?
I doubt it. I think maybe in the next 2 to 3 weeks, because traditionally it's normally the last of March. Really good numbers the first couple weeks of April is when it really turns on, and since we're so warm, I'm going to give it a good 2 to 4 weeks early, but I'm not going to say that they're going to be here by this weekend.
Okay, Carnan. Now, put the envelope to your head. You got your turban on. Mm-hmm. I want to know, are we getting another cold spell?
At this rate, no.
You don't think another one's going to hit?
I think we're going to get a mild one, but I already lost the bet with Mike. I figured it was going to be by this week.
Yeah.
It should have been here. I mean, I can't remember the last time we've had this consecutive of long, hot weather in February. I really can't. You know, usually we're getting minor cold fronts that come through for a day or two, and then one good one around that new moon or full moon. And the long-range forecast, again, is still in the high 80s for the next 7 to 10 days.
So climate change is real, and thank God for global warming, because I like Canadians, and if it wasn't for global warming, there'd be a mile and a half ice on Canada. So, you know, thank God that global warming did away with the glaciers. All right. You know, it's always funny how they talk about glaciers are melting away now. What if they didn't melt 10,000 years ago? What if we didn't have global warming? There would be half the country. You'd have to burrow holes in the ice to get to. Illinois would have 2 miles of ice on it, you know?
Illinois wouldn't have existed.
Yeah, it would just be Iceland everywhere north of Tennessee, right?
Right.
But, I mean, we could still live in Florida because Florida was great all even through the Ice Age. And it'd be much bigger.
Yeah, it was a lot wider.
It was a lot bigger. So we still have a lot of land. But, you know, I like the Canadians, you know, so I don't want them to have to, you know, lose their home. So thank God for global warming. All right. Getting back into the fishing and eliminating some of the weird responses. I don't know how you can keep coming up with this garbage. I mean, can't you, you know, settle down, Robert?
I don't know.
All right. Blackfin
getting
tuna.
Out of hand.
Blackfin tuna.
Yeah. A couple different reports on those. Well, I don't know where you're going with this. For all I know, you're going to talk about blackfin tuna and then jump into black crappie.
Yeah, well, that's actually where we need to go. Okay, black crappie.
I should have brought the snare drum in today.
Yes. All right, black crappie. Talk about crappie fishing. We're hitting right at the end of this. I mean, the spawn's pretty much over.
Yeah.
And they're scattering out.
Definitely. I mean, a handful of crappie fishing. I mean, Lake Okeechobee's still doing really good on them. And then Manatee is doing really good on them. But other than that, around the local areas, it's very, very scattered. You're working to find just a few fish here and there. It seems like the guys that are either getting up right at first light going out or fishing into the dark are doing a little bit better on them.
Now, I will tell you, Istipoga, don't bother going there for crappie, but the bass are going off like crazy. I would say they're probably averaging 5 pounds right now.
Yeah.
You're getting not a lot of 2-3 pounders. I mean, there's a bunch of them there, but the bigger ones, I mean, there's some beautiful bass in Istipoga right now. The Stick Marsh over on the other coast, since the first of the year, one of our captains, Morris Campbell, I think has got 11 or 12 fish over 10 pounds in the last month or two.
That might even be over 12 pounds.
Yeah, he's got some over 12, but... Yeah. He's got at least a dozen or more over 10. He's been averaging at least 1 to 2 10-pounders every trip over there. So a lot of good bass fishing over there. Bass fishing here, Rotunda's still doing really well. Those tarpon don't seem to get any bigger or smaller, but they're still hitting there. The bass lures, you're going to get tarpon, possible snook, but a lot of bass in Rotunda right now. Northport, how's Northport doing?
Northport's doing really good. Most of the canals most of those fish are in post-spawn, so you got a lot of males sitting on beds right now, and they're easy to catch usually just by throwing a lizard or a soft plastic worm and letting it sit in the bed, and you'll stick them that way.
Yeah, if the water's a little murky and you can't find them, what I do when I'm trying to search for beds that I can't see is I put a lizard on, and I use a bullet weight on the front of it, and I run the hook through and make sure the hook goes all the way through the bait and then just snag the tip with a little bit of the plastic. and I give a very high lift to the rod so it jumps up and then falls down. But you got to wait 15 to 30 seconds before you move it again, because that bass sitting on the bed is going to see that lizard come in. Now, it doesn't want to eat it. I mean, it will eat it if it has to, but what it's doing is it's going to come back, flare its gills way out to get really scary looking, and it'll go back and forth, side to side, flaring its gills out, trying to scare it out of the nest. Well, if it's still sitting there, and what you're waiting for is to feel a very sharp, hard hit, just bam, they hit that lizard, but you can't set the hook. It's like topwater fishing. Feel the hit and freeze. Don't move, because if you move that bait, you're going to miss that fish, because all he's trying to do is stun it or kill it. And once you feel that hit, you got to just keep yourself very still. Don't move the rod at all. Keep everything as still as possible, because he's looking at it. Did he kill it? Is it stunned? Okay. Now he's going to go grab it, pick it up, and move it out of the nest. And again, no fingers, right? So he's going to get it in his mouth, pick it up to get it out of the nest. And when you see the line move, that's when you set the hook.
Good way to describe it. I mean, you'll see them actually move away with the lizard itself.
Yeah, you're going to see the line move, but you can't set the hook because you feel a hit. When you feel the hit, it was already too late. He struck at it, kind of like if you backslapped at something. It's just a real quick hit, like the flick of a bullwhip. So you got to wait till you see the line move. This is visual, not feeling. You might feel it start to do something. Wait until you actually see the line moving and then set your hook. Now, blackfin tuna. Are we okay to do that now?
No, not yet.
Not yet? All right, what do you want to do?
Some of those bigger bass, because yeah, those are the small males that are going to range in that 2 to 5 pound range. But guys have been doing well in that 5, 6, and even some 7 pound. The females that have already laid their eggs, now they're trying to build up their mass back again after holding all those eggs. So the guys that are shiner fishing have been doing pretty exceptionally well fishing the middle of the channel around some kind of structure, you know, whether it's duckweed, water hyacinth, something that's creating some good shade. Those fish are staying out more in that
so open not as water. Much structure as just shade,
more shade. Yeah,
if you can get a weed mat going where they can lay up underneath there, because the bait's not going to want to be in the sun. The sun gets real bright, gets real hot, the bait's going to go up into the shade, and so the fish are hanging out in the shade.
Yep, and they're staying over that deeper water because it is a little bit cooler because of how high the temperature's gotten lately. So it seems like the guys are doing exceptionally well on those. A couple guys are catching a few on spinner baits here and there, but it's really been more of a shiner feed than anything else.
I was talking to one guy. He was throwing that big storm, the one we sell for snook and cobia.
Yeah.
Not storm, savage.
Okay.
The savage trout.
Oh, really?
And they're throwing, and he was actually using the second, well, not the small one we throw for snook and redfish, the 6-incher. He was actually using the one above that.
No kidding.
He said the bass were just beating on it.
Nice.
I want to try that bluegill. I want to come up here to Northport and try a couple of canals with that bluegill bait from Savage.
Yeah.
I think those big females would just scarf that
jump
thing
on
up.
It. Yeah, absolutely.
I use that bluegill on snook around the trestles and dams because it looks so much like a tilapia.
Right, exactly.
Same physical size and everything as a nice tasty tilapia or Mayan cichlid or whatever. It's panfish, so throw that up for those snook. But out for bass fishing, everybody throws a bluegill on. I mean, I know it's illegal, but I know everybody does it.
Right.
Naughty, naughty people. Bad. We're going to go bad people of that. You're not supposed to use bluegills for bait, are you?
To be honest with you, I'm not 100% sure of that law anymore. I know you're not allowed to transport them from one body of water from another as far as live goes. But I don't know about using them for bait.
I don't remember the law either. But I'm just going to say bad people.
They've changed so many rules with that lately that I haven't kept up with it.
All right. RJ, is it okay if I'm not asking him. Is it okay if I talk about blackfin tuna now?
This is a tough decision. Yeah, sure. Let's talk about blackfin tuna.
All right.
And then we'll go to direct to chunk light in water.
I like it in oil, believe it or not. I'm one of those. I don't know. To me, you get that tuna in the can. It's got the oil in it. It's still moist and everything. And that spring water stuff, I don't know. I guess it's healthy, but, hey, I'm old. I have diabetes. I got, you know, aneurysms and brain things and radiation. Well, I care about eating healthy. You know, it ain't going to matter anyway. I like the oil. All right. Tuna and oil. Lots of mayo. Bunch of pickles. Dill pickles chopped up.
Wasabi.
What?
Wasabi.
Yeah, and relish. Oh. And relish. You mix relish, mustard, and wasabi into your chunk light tuna.
Really?
Yep.
You guys are brutal, man. Wow. All right. I'll take your word for it. I'm not doing hot stuff.
Come back again next week for another fishing recipe.
Yeah, well, I can tell you.
Fishing, it's called fishing at Publix.
Yeah, okay. Hey, I can tell you. I went out fishing. I actually made it out on the water. And nice time, went fishing the islands up in the Peace River. A few catfish, stingray, and then Terry started catching redfish. And what was weird, you know, everybody's jig head crazy, jig head, jig head, jig head. Put the shrimp on a jig head. Put shrimp on a jig head. And I'm got tired of losing the shrimp, catching catfish. Finally, I took the darn jig heads off because that's kind of the popular thing right now, shrimp on a jig head, right?
Yeah, it's very trendy right now.
So I'm sitting there, and what's nice about it, I left a couple of them out with the jig head, but I went back to free lining. Mm-hmm. And I had a couple shrimp that were big enough where I could actually cast them to where I had the hits before, and that's when she started catching the redfish, when it was a hook, because they were coming up, and I think literally just kind of chewing the shrimp off of the jig head without really moving it around. And so we weren't getting notified, you know, by the line moving or the rod bending or anything that they were eating the shrimp. The shrimp were just gone. So Went back to just a free line hook, and you could, all of a sudden, you could feel that little tiny, you know, bump, bump when the fish were chewing on it just that little bit. Set the hook, redfish. And it worked. But had to get rid of the jig heads to actually feel the redfish eating them.
I could absolutely see that.
And it was surprising because usually those redfish, and these were 17, 18-inch redfish, and usually they strike pretty hard, but these weren't. They were just literally mouthing the bait, just chewing it off the hook and spitting the jig head out without moving. I mean, where the shrimp was, I'm pretty sure they just chewed it up, spit the jig head right back on the bottom because as soon as we put that got rid of the weights, you could feel it and bang. And I wouldn't get any hits. I had bobbers out with hooks on them. I had jig heads out. It was the free line. You never know which way it's going to be. Yeah. If you're in an area and there should be fish, just because you're using one bait, that might not be the issue. It might be how you're rigging that bait. That could be the main point, is we had to get rid of the jig heads. And even though a month ago when we were out, they were all hitting off the jig heads. That was the way they were going to eat them. And I had free line ones out, bobbers. They were hitting everything off the jig head. But now it changed.
Yeah. Well, the weather's changed, everything else. But, you know, we tell people all the time, no matter what time of year it is, always experiment. You're usually not fishing with just one pole, or it's not usually just one of you fishing. One person should be using a bobber, another person should try a jig head, and another person should try free lining. See who starts getting the bites, and then stick with that routine for a while. But if all of a sudden everything stops biting that way, switch back over to one of those other two ways before you move and see if the fish just maybe change their spot where they were feeding at, because the tide might have slowed down or sped up, causing those fish to go at different points in the water column. They didn't necessarily stop feeding. They just stopped feeding that way.
All right, what do you think of this no-brainer hook? It's a circle hook with a little bit of lead on the shank. And it reminds me of that Keys yellowtail jig with the J-hook. The larva jig, yeah.
It looks very much identical to it, except for it's just on a circle hook.
Yeah. Have you seen these, RJ?
It's a neat concept. I like the concept of it, but I'm kind of anti-circle hook as much as possible, to be honest.
I understand.
But as far as the idea behind it, I think it could be really, really promising. And the other thing is, that larva hook's huge in the Keys and even around here for yellowtail and stuff like that. Technically, it's illegal.
Here, but I hear it's legal in the Keys, but not legal here.
It's illegal.
On the Atlantic, it's illegal?
It's still illegal. It's a federal and state law.
Okay. So, you
know, so they're still technically breaking the law. It's just nobody's really been enforcing it.
Yeah, I mean, it was a stupid law to begin with.
It is. I agree, but they get the ticket, not me. So I always got to at least tell them what the idea is behind it.
RJ, what do you think of that no-brainer? It's a jig hook. I don't know how else to explain it. It's literally just a hook with some lead on the shank and painted colors or natural colors. What do you think of it?
You know, it goes back to an old design. I remember as a kid when we used to put solder on hooks.
Yeah.
And that would give the end of the hook a little bit of weight, and you'd stick a night crawler on that, and you could toss it a little bit further, and you know it went to the bottom pretty quick. So it's an old design, but now, like you said, it's on a circle.
That. Completely forgot about when people would, not that many years ago, I used to be able to buy little strips of lead. We'd just wrap around there and the split shots and stuff. It's just kind of a pre-made, what we used to do all the time anyway.
Right, right. And again, I'm not sure how that works with a circle hook. If you're adding additional weight up to the eye of the hook, if that's going to make any change in the leverage of how a circle hook works, I'd love to hear somebody that's used them and what they say
about
it.
Well, I bought these because, and I hate to say it, but a lesbian couple that comes in. Extraordinary people, and the one woman just loves these things. I mean, she so adamant. I had to stock them. She didn't want to buy them on the internet anymore. I had to stock them, and she's amazing. And she just, this is the best thing since, you know, we started slicing Wonder Bread.
Wow. So maybe that weight on the end makes the hook more efficient.
It could be. I really don't know. Any ideas, Robert?
I don't know. I'd have to see how it would work on a hook set.
God, I hope she's a lesbian. She might just be a real tough-looking woman. That would be awful.
And what does this have to do with Blackfin tuna anyway?
Right, I don't know. I like her anyway.
But you know, we all both Robert and I dislike. I should say we don't hate. We just don't particularly care to use circle hooks.
I don't like circle hooks. I think they're cruel to the fish. I think trying to get it out of fish's mouth.
It takes forever to get it out, you know. Just, and especially if you get something that hooks a little internal in the mouth and the tongue or that area there. You really do damage to the fish before you get the hook out. So.
J-hooks are bad, but I think, hooking the fish up, the circle hooks are great. It's just getting them off that's the problem.
Right.
It's a great catch and kill hook. It's just not a great catch and release hook, in my opinion. But anyway, I just forgot about those. We were talking about the problem is I think because they're so light, it might not hurt the bite, you know, but I can honestly tell you, I don't think they would have done me a bit of good on the islands last night, because any amount of weight and you couldn't feel those fish. They were literally not moving while they ate the shrimp. Very weird phenomenon. And just by not having anything, you could see the line kind of go a little bit, and then you tighten up, you could literally almost feel them chewing it. One of the nice things about having a high carbon rod, I was actually using, she had the 2500 Conflict 2 combo. It's got a very nice rod on it.
Oh, that's awesome.
And
you know what rod that is?
No.
The Allegiance.
Really? Yep. Reguides?
It's the Allegiance rod.
I would have bet against it.
Put them right next to each other. They're exactly the same rod.
I would have bet against it.
Yeah.
Because that Allegiance got such a weird handle. They changed the handle. They changed the cosmetics. I mean, great.
Yeah. All the guides line up. Everything about it looks identical to the Allegiance.
I'll believe you. I just can't imagine that it's true. But the Allegiance is a very good rod, but I just don't think of it as a great rod.
Right. And that combo is amazing.
That Conflict, too, is an awesome combo.
I mean, it is definitely a home run the way they set that combo up.
I think the Allegiance, to me, is a good rod. I mean, the guides are good. They last. They don't rust out. They don't fall apart. The reel seat's nice. I do like, because it doesn't have a reel seat, it's got a handle with cork and everything on it.
Yeah.
You're not paying a lot of money for a rod and holding a plastic reel seat.
Right.
I never get that. Makes me nuts. Spend all that money on a rod and I'm holding the exact same thing as if I bought a combo.
Right.
You know, the plastic reel seat is the same on a $20 combo or a $200 rod. I want, for $100, $200, put a little effort into it. Give me something nice to hold my fingers on. All right, Blackfin, is it okay now? I got RJ's permission.
I'm good with it.
You're good with it now?
I'm good with it.
Okay, first thing I do when I start thinking blackfin tuna, I want sunglasses. I want hat and sunglasses. Because when I get out in the fish, I'm hunting and looking as much as I am trolling and fishing. I tend to see the fish in the water a lot. I see them just under the surface, splashing. I want to see. Now, when you're doing your glasses, doesn't matter glass or plastic, whatever you want to wear, polycarbonate. Hold
fancy plastic.
Yeah, fancy plastic or glass. Do not look at the side other people see. That's the mirrors or whatever it is. That's to make you look cool. But that's not the part that tells you if you're going to be able to see the fish or not. You got to look through them through the side that you look through. Look at them like if you were going to put them on. Now, you're going to hold them up to the light, and some have a brown tint to them. Some have gray. Some have blue. But we're talking the Gulf of Mexico, so no brown-colored lenses. No brown-colored lenses, no wire paper coat hangers or whatever the heck that was.
Why is that?
Brown tends to, they used to call them blue blockers. And the color blue, it really mutes that. It allows everything to be very crisp, very sharp images. You put them on while you're driving during the day or standing outside, and you understand the term rose-colored glasses. I was driving along, and I'm looking, going, God, it's pretty out here today. Boy, look at the trees. It's so green, and everything's so, man, it's wonderful. I pick my glass up. Now, same old nasty world. Put my glass back on. Oh, yeah, it's pretty again. That's what the brown does. If you're in Charlotte Harbor, they're amazing. But they eliminate the blues. What color are the waves? Blue. What color do the fish mostly have? Blues. Where is all the reflections? In the blue spectrum. You can't see it. All of a sudden, you're out there, and all of a sudden, you're getting hit by waves, and you know, all this stuff's going on. You're better without glasses than brown lenses in blue water. Literally, get rid of the brown lenses in the blue water. I have to carry two pairs of glasses with me. Carry one for in the harbor, because the brown does really well, but I get blues, greens, grays, something for out in the Gulf. You can't use the brown. It's extraordinary how poor it is. You can get away with the blues and grays in the harbor, but the browns don't transpose out into the Gulf. You're missing so much what you could see. But remember, you're looking at it from the side that you look through. Hold them up to the light and look for that color, not that other people see, because that's just a mirror. It could be blue, it could be green, whatever it is. It doesn't matter. That's not what helps you see the fish. That's what helps you be cool. You know, yeah, baby, cool. Yeah, that's like me. I'm cool, baby, cool. Yeah.
If you're playing cards, too, I mean, it helps hide your eyes. So
well, the mirror finish, that's for making money, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's cheating. I quit watching the poker tournaments when they could wear hats and glasses. The whole idea is to be able to read the other people. Why don't they just give them a hood? Put a hood over their head and, you know, play computer poker.
Right.
I think that's cheating to wear glasses while you're playing poker. But I'm old school, you know. And it is a fishing show, so that's relevant. All right. We've determined you're going to wear glasses either green or gray, and it's very, very important because you want to see all this stuff. When you go fishing for them, Robert, are you a troller or drift or anchor? What do you like?
Honestly, it depends on the time of year and the reports I'm getting. You know, usually my best, most productive times for tuna have been one of two ways, either going up behind a shrimp boat and blind chunking bait over the sides. But my most productive way, honestly, around here has always been chasing after the bonita schools, so just running and gunning.
All right, so what you're doing is looking for birds, and because you can see the birds farther away than you can see the fish. When you see flocks of seagulls, terns, maybe even a frigate bird or something, you're looking at them for the direction, going out, getting your boat in that general area, then I start scanning the surface of the water. Again, critical to have the right color glasses on. Scanning the surface of the water, what I'm looking for is splashes, If it's a little choppy, you got to look for a wave that's possibly going the wrong way. Waves will form a pattern, even light waves. And you look for something, you know, what they say in Sesame, one thing that's like the other, only not, or something,
right, something
like that.
Yeah.
It's the one that's different than the other ones. That's going to start telling you there's fish. When you see a school of bonita start blitzing, you will literally see a frothing white bit of water, fish coming in and out of it. But I've actually seen them raise the surface area up a foot, foot and a half higher than the water around it from all the frothing. I mean, it literally, like if you stuck a Mixmaster in it, turned it on high, and it just started boiling and frothing. That's the way those fish look. The key part about it is they're hitting on little tiny baits.
Yeah, yeah, little glass minnows, little fry, stuff like that.
All right. So if you're looking for the birds, we go or we see them blitz up. The thing you want to do is get close to them, but never cast into the boiling mix. Yeah. Whether it's hardcore boiling, where they're frothing, raising the water level, or just where they're kind of hitting on the surface, boom, 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 you want to cast off on the side of that. Try to get your cast past the school or at least next to it. If you cast into the middle of it, that lure hits the water, that bait hits the water, they're gone. They're going to sound down. They might not come back up all day. So you get a cast off to the side. Drag your baits along. Get the stragglers off the outside. You can catch them and catch them and catch them for just, it goes on and on and on, where if you throw right in the middle of them, you get one and done. If you're lucky, two, but one and done is the usual story. Casting off to the side, bringing your lures across the side of it, that's how you keep getting fish after fish, by not disturbing the main bulk of the schooling fish. I was walking by, and we were talking about, I was thinking about blackfin tuna, and this is like a MEPS. Mm-hmm. It's a Vibrax, V-I-B-R-A-X, and it's quarter ounce, so they come a little heavier. The neat part about it is it has a treble hook or a single hook replacement. Now, I don't know if either of these are strong enough for the bonita. You might have to use a VMC or replacement hook to put on there, but that little inline spinner, like a MEPS, and it's going to go through the water. It's small. It's heavy. You could cast it. Just even moderate retrieve is going to get that thing spinning. Just fast enough to get it spinning, bring it right along next to that school of bonita. I think it'd be a home run. I think the bonita and the blackfin, I think, would just knock the tar out of this.
I think, oh, yeah. I mean, I have no doubt that they will. It's just a matter of will it hold up. That would be my only point of curiosity, but it'd definitely be worth taking out there and give it a try.
It's a heck of a guess, and I don't know why, literally in 30-some years, I never thought about an inline spinner for bonita or blackfin tuna, because they hit the same stuff.
For that matter. I mean, I've caught Spanish mackerel on them by accident.
Oh, yeah, I've caught trout on them. Everything in the harbor, I've taken MEPS and MEPS-like inline spinners out for years because they're very effective. It's just too hard to convince people because it's a freshwater bait. They don't want to throw it in salt water. So I gave up trying to explain that to people. But the only one you really talk about that with is when you get the newbies down, the rife from up north. Right. I say, you got anything like a MAPS or a rooster tail or a Vibrolux or whatever? And they're like, yeah. I said, use those. They're going to rust all up. But boy, until they rust up, they're going to catch a lot of fish.
Yeah, they are.
Now, that one's got black chrome stainless wire, bullet weight. Number 3 blade on it. I think it'll last a while.
No, we didn't talk about the lure that we would use for those tuna when we were running up to them in the bonita schools. Because, I mean, the biggest thing is we're looking for the bonita.
Right.
And the tuna are following the bonita, either under them or to the sides of them.
Well, it's like you're looking for the schools of bonita, and then you're catching them. And then you got to look for the one that it looks like a bonita, fights like a bonita, but doesn't look like a bonita.
Right.
It's the same shape. It's the same body style.
Pretty close.
Same tail. I mean, if you're 30 feet away, you wouldn't be able to tell them apart,
no.
You know?
No.
But mostly it's the coloring that you can tell the difference in, isn't it?
Yeah. It's got a darker back. It's more of a solid color rather than a broken color.
It doesn't have all the squigglies on it.
Right.
And the mottled pattern of a bonita. Bonita's gorgeous fish, and hence the name. Bonito, it's the,
little,
you know, the
tunny.
Pretty one.
Yeah.
Little tunny.
The biggest thing with me is I'll run a gun up to the schools of bonita, and I cast the Williamson. It's a lead spoon. It's like a small speed jig with a treble hook on the bottom of it. It's very heavy. It casts a mile, but I usually try to cast in front and just past the school of the bonita.
All right.
And I give it a good 10 count and let it sink down.
Now, the half ounce one is about an inch and a half long, and then they got the 7/8 ounce, which is, I would say, a little over 3 inches long. Which one are you using in that?
The larger one. I'm using that 3-incher just to be able to, because it's sometimes those the bonitas sound on you as you're coming up to them. So I want to be able to get as good of a long cast as possible to them.
So the one you're talking about is literally about 4 fingers long. You know, four fingers wide, you know, long. Put your, when you lay it on your 4 fingers, it's going to be about the width of your hand. That's the one you like? You don't like the little tiny one?
No, the little tiny one's good, but it's just too hard to cast any distance. It's one thing if you're up close and personal, but usually I'm throwing a little heavier line. I'm using my 8-foot tarpon rod with 50-pound braid on it so I can get that distance out of my cast to it.
Okay.
And most of the time, you know, people that are used to catching blackfin tuna, like in the Keys, average one down there, it's a little football. It's 2 to 5 pounds. I mean, an 8-pound blackfin is pretty big down there versus here. You won't catch 40 or 50 of them a day the way you do in the Keys, but here you'll catch 1 to 5 in a day, and the average size of a blackfin tuna is 20 pounds. 25s are very, very normal.
See, to me, I'm still throwing 20-pound braid, 12-pound mono, 4,000 spinning reel, so I got enough line on it. You know, I need something with, I want to have at least 250 yards of line.
Right.
So you're using a lot heavier tackle than I am.
Yeah.
Now, here's something that's kind of fun. Those that you're talking about, $5-6. Now, for $6 to $7, Sabeel has one, and it's pretty much the exact same thing, but comes in a gorgeous package for another buck or two.
Yeah, it's a very pretty package. And you know what's funny? I didn't even know we had these.
Yep.
That's funny.
Now, the ones you're thinking about is this one. The one I'm talking about here is the Natural Shiner. It's the 14-gram sinking. It's called U-I-B-R-A-T-O, Ubrato. And that's the Sabeel. It's actually an awesome bait. But then you've got the stick shad and a tiny one and the sinking lure. What do you think of that? I think that'd be awesome on the blackfin. That stick shad and that little tiny one in the sinking.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, to me, this, it says it's going to go down about 2 to 3 feet. It's an 1/8 ounce. That's the only problem with it. 1/8 ounce lure, it's hard to get any distance out of. 1/4-1/2 ounce, I can zing them. If I'm real close, I could throw this. But I think it's too light to be able to catch, get the distance I need to catch the fish.
Right.
I think I'm going to go back to the other one. And, you know, that's 1/2 ounce. It's the same size, tiny, but literally 4 times as heavy. Now, one of them that I think makes a very interesting lead spoon, let's call these. These are jigs. But years ago, we used to call them lead spoons. It's just a piece of lead flattened out, shaped kind of like a fish. Lure Jensen has one, $5. The cool part about it, it comes with a treble hook or a single hook. You know, they're cadmium, they're saltwater rated. You can cast, jig, troll with them or whatever. But the Crippled Herring from Lure Jensen, now that's a nice one. And this one is in the 4751. It's a 3/4 ounce Crippled Herring. But I like that bait.
Oh, yeah, these are amazing.
Now,
and a lot of guys from the Northeast are very, very familiar with these because they use them for the bluefish, the mackerel, their false albacore, and even stripers. So it's a very, very popular bait, and a lot of guys even use them in the Great Lakes for salmon.
So, I mean, the Ubrato, I don't know. Oh, Vibrato. It's a V, not a U. V-I-B-R-A-T-O.
Suddenly, it all makes sense.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, what the heck? All right.
Stupid. Really, Patrick is French, so it wouldn't surprise me to come up with a really bizarre name, let's face it. He's a nice guy, but he's
Patrick
still French.
Patrick Sabeel, the guy who designed these, is literally one of the craziest people you've ever met in your life. We're 1 year at the tent, so we're standing there. He is literally in water over his ankles, casting a lure in the tent sail parking lot. the rain had collapsed the tent he was in. He had to get outside of the tent because it literally collapsed in under the weight of the water. Thunder and lightning cracking all over. He's standing in the middle of the parking lot throwing a lure, telling me the fishing in my parking lot stinks. You know, he's awesome.
Yeah.
Love Patrick. All right. This is a regular spoon, crocodile spoon. I did pick the little crocodile spoon because it's heavier. I like the Castmaster style as well. What we're looking for, in case you haven't noticed, small and heavy. I would say 2 inches long to inch and a half, 2 inches long, up till about 3.5 or so, about the width of your palm, but nothing bigger than that. If it's that long, it's got to be skinny, because that's a glass minnows, bay anchovies, whatever they are these fish are feeding on, long and thin, kind of translucent, and that's why it's key. Small and heavy. Heavy so you can throw it, small so they'll actually eat it. If you put like a 1 ounce Johnson Sprite on or crocodile spoon, it's too big. You're going to throw that, troll it, pull it, nothing's eating it. It's not even close to what they're interested in. Don't ask me why. I can just tell you is. Because I was out there at fish all around the boat. I'm throwing all these spoons, the big jigs, doing all that. I got back, I was telling my dad about it, and he just started laughing at me and said, "You're an idiot." And I went, "Oh, yeah, okay, enough. I'm sorry, Dad, enough. If you wonder why, you have no idea. I am the way I am because it's called square fruit. The apple literally came right down next to the tree and didn't roll 2 feet. Square fruit. All right. The other thing I'm going to take out there is pompano jigs. I love pompano jigs for blackfin tuna and bonita. These, the standard pompano jig is kind of a round head, little mylar tail on it, cut off right behind the hook. And the other one is the silly jig, crazy jig. Which would you use, Robert?
Honestly, I'm going to probably stick with the traditional old school pompano jig.
You know, right. The round ball. The silly jig?
Yeah. Yeah. Just because I like how it works.
Okay. I would literally bet because you throw that crazy jig for almost everything.
Well, everything pretty much eats it, but I have the confidence traditional pompano jig. It just works so well. And the other thing, if you really want to get really super crazy, which I have not tried yet with that typical crazy jig, is a tandem rig with that pompano jig. You know?
Oh, where you take about a 4 foot piece of line, tie the crazy jig to one end of it.
No, I'm talking about I'd run the pompano jigs, I would also run as a tandem, but I haven't tried the crazy jigs as a
If you were going to do that, you'd have to put the pompano jig on the short one, crazy jig on the long one. But I think they'd be too heavy to throw together. They're both going to try and sink on you.
What about trolling them?
Yeah, I would still put a spoon on one. Put a Clark spoon on the long one. Put either of these two jigs on the other one.
Gotcha.
You could do jig and jig, and it would work. But I would do a light crazy jig, like the 1/8 ounce or 1/16 ounce crazy jig. And then the 1/2 ounce pompano jig, and that would probably make it work. The crazy jig on the long one. So I've got about 2.5 feet out to the crazy jig, the light one, and about 18 inches, a foot to 18 inches down to the pompano jig. And I simply do it by tying the crazy jig to one end, putting the line through one part of the swivel, and then tying the pompano jig to the other, holding the swivel up, pulling them to where I've got about 2/3 for the light one and 1/3, and tie a knot in the top and tie my line to the swivel. It's pretty simple. If you don't understand what I just said, stop in the store. I'll help you with it. It's real easy. One of my favorite ones I started using the last time I was offshore, and I actually caught a lot of fish with it. I was really impressed, is the VMC Hot Skirts. I like these. It's got a heavy head. Small but pretty strong hook on it, bucktail mylar mixed tail on it, and they're not big, but they're actually heavy, and I did real good with those.
Right. No, I could see that definitely, and it's basically kind of a cross between a regular bucktail and a pompano bucktail, because it's just a hair longer than the shank. best I can tell from looking at it.
Yeah, I mean, I started using them. They're called hot skirts from VMC, and I really like those things. And once again, all these are small, little jigs that weigh a lot. What about this, Robert? Now, I'm not sure if it's too big or not, but I've seen people catch a lot of fish with these things. They're a touch on the pricey side. It's a spool tech, the small one.
Yeah, the little 4-inch spool tech.
What do you think? Do you think that could possibly do it, or do you think it's just too big?
It might work, but it's starting to put it on that larger side because it doesn't quite have that thinner profile to it. You know, the length would probably be about right, but the girth, it's starting to get a little chunky where it's going to...
Girth is getting a little chunky for that. I thought maybe I could troll it.
I think you could troll it.
I think it might be okay trolling. I agree with you on the length, but I think it's a little too thick. I think it's going to get less hits than if I was throwing one of those little... either the Gotcha or the Williamson. What the heck are these called from Williamson? G-O-M-A-M-E. Guami?
Guami?
G-O-M-A-M-E. Any ideas, RJ?
G-O-M?
G-O-M-A-M-E. Guami. Yeah, that's what they both say, G-O-M-A-M-E.
Yeah, I'd go with Guami.
Yeah, I got no idea. Okay. Go to the store, look it up for yourself.
Yeah.
Like, really? I'm expecting, you know, skinny jig, whatever.
That would make sense.
That would make sense.
But they call it a mullet, too, so really.
Yeah, okay. I got it. All right. Good trolling stuff are the flash feather rigged. I like them in both of the smaller size for the bonita and all that. They stay very close surface. Little tiny lead head made to skip around by the surface. They're from Williams and the flash feathered rigs. I start out trolling. I'm going to put like a lure like a Rapala, you know, one that's depth finder or bomber or even a man stretch. Something that's going to go down about 15 feet. And then I'm going to put a storm twitch or a mid-size Yozuri or probably a 15 bomber on the next one. And then up on the top, I like one of those feather jigs while I'm out there. Yeah. And another type of small something. What would you be your other troller out of all this stuff here? Would you go with the Guami, the Gotcha jig fish, or the Crippled Herring? Or would you just put a jig on or paddle tail? What would you use?
I mean, for my secondary really shallow runner, I mean, I like a cedar plug for trolling, but smaller-wise, I'm going to probably just go with like a little Clark spoon or a squid spoon.
Yeah, okay. I didn't grab one of those, and that's probably the best trolling bait of all.
Right.
So that was really, that's a pretty good point.
I like what it because it's just light. It skips right across the surface or swims under the surface just off and on, but the profile, I think, is just going to be perfect.
All right. What kind of baits available in the Gulf of Mexico right now?
I've been hearing about some schools of thread fins, some schools of white bait out there in that 20 to 50 feet of water. But I've been hearing a lot about the blue runners and cigar minnows that are out there in that 50 to 75 feet of water. That's been really
the cigar minnows. That's like, I mean, if you buy them, they're a lot of money.
$17, $18
a box, and they're really live and fresh, one of the best baits in the world out there.
Yeah.
It's staggering. And there's big schools of them out there. Sabiki rig's your best way to go. I'm using a 3/4 ounce either bass casting sinker on the end of it or the Water Gremlin snap lock. I like the snap lock because it's easy to get on and off. That's from Water Gremlin. Those are sinkers, the bass casting sinker, the Water Gremlin. We've got, like, Sabikis for, like, $1. And they're pretty much as good as the other ones.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that there's a lot of difference between a $3 Sabiki and a $5 Sabiki. But one I tend to take with me, it's a $3 one. And it's from R&R Tackle. And it's an RGL-5. Hook size 5, mainline 6, branch line 4. What it is, though, that really makes it interesting for me It has four of the little sabikis with the skin feather on the hook in red and four with green.
Right.
Every other sabiki, it's the only one I know of that does not have all the same color on every hook. And that's the problem with the dollar ones. They work as well or better, but they only have one color. I like both colors. You never know. They're going to hit red, they're going to hit green. Now, Robert, anything you're going to sum up with?
No, we just got our talk coming up next door at the Common Grounds, what, next week?
Yeah, the February 27th at Common Grounds. You guys got to come up, join us. Call 941-625-3888 for seat reservations. Yes, indeedy. Fish and Frank here, RJ in the command center, and Robert in the chair across from me. Can't think of anything left to talk about that you'd be interested in. So, bye, guys.
Right, you're clear.